Welcome, everybody, to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. With next week being Thanksgiving, we want to give all of our listeners a chance to call into the show in the second half hour and share with us what you're thankful for. This will give you some time to think about it between now and then and plan what you want to say. So don't be nervous. It's radio. Nobody's going to be able to see you. And you can just give Oscar your first name or a radio name because that's what they do in the business. If you're afraid of someone identifying you, the number, in case you didn't know or you've forgotten, 520-750-7456. We'll make an announcement in the second half hour as to when to start calling in for the things you're thankful for. In the meantime, if you want to participate in any of the discussion of any topics before that, you can still call in. Just the Thanksgiving part is going to be in the second half. Phone lines are open, and Oscar is ready and waiting, 520-7456.
Morning, Doug.
Morning, Oscar. You know by now that we always refer to the words and wisdom of Solomon in our discussions of the culture we live in because it's the truth. The interesting thing about the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, which is what we usually reference, is the phrase give thanks or thanksgiving is never used. And I never realized that until I actually specifically was looking for it. It just seemed that's something that would be in there, but it's not. But you probably already knew that, though, right, Fred? You'd think that all the wisdom and wealth Solomon received, he would, in that wisdom, remind us to give thanks for what we have, but there's nothing there. So I was thinking about that for a while, and the only conclusion I could come up with was that given his father, King David, was so prolific in the Psalms about giving God thanks, Solomon probably figured he wasn't going to improve on the Psalms in any way, and he could instead concentrate on wisdom for dealing with the world. And in fact, there's at least 25 specific references in Psalms to giving thanks to the Lord, so maybe that's why. One thing Solomon does address, though, is the pursuit of material things. In Ecclesiastes 1:10, Solomon asks, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? His implication here is that we're always looking for the latest and greatest thing to satisfy us, whether it's the newest iPhone, iPad, eyelashes. You figure it out in a minute. There's nothing from a material aspect that is really new and is going to satisfy us. And it won't last. Ecclesiastes 4:6 says, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. The point is that whatever you're after isn't going to last. And it's all gone before you know it. And that really is the situation when it comes to the day after Thanksgiving, which is, of course, Black Friday. That's where everybody that ate too much turkey on Thanksgiving thinks they're going to burn it off by fighting everybody else at Walmart for the $10 flat screen TV that's not going to do them any good anyways and has further dulled the mind that Solomon aptly calls simple-minded. So where did the term Black Friday actually come from? What does it actually mean? Well, nowadays it's meant to be the day that retailers actually get back into the black from a profit perspective. In other words, they actually start making money with all the holiday sales instead of being in the red or losing money because of the start of the Christmas shopping season. But that really isn't the origin of the term Black Friday. And when we come back from this real short break, we'll get into what really is the origin of the term Black Friday. So, like I said, second half hour, we'll be doing a giving thanks for what you're thankful for, the listeners. 750-7456 if you want to talk, discuss anything in the meantime. And we'll be back right after this. So what is the real origin of the term Black Friday? Well, like Weird Al Yankovic said, it's a traffic jam. According to Joseph Barrett, who was a reporter in Philadelphia, the term actually came out of the old Philadelphia Police Department's traffic squads. The cops used it to describe the worst traffic jams which annually occurred in Center City on the Friday after Thanksgiving. Every Black Friday, no policeman was permitted to take the day off. The division was placed on 12 tours of duty, and even the police band was ordered to Center City. It was not unusual to see a trombone player directing traffic. Now, I don't know whether he was playing his trombone while he was directing traffic, but that's what they were doing. Two officers were assigned to intersections along Market Street to control the throngs of pedestrians. And he says the department also placed police officers outside parking garages because lot-filled signs failed to deter motorists from lining up on the curb lane outside the garage, which reduced the street size from two lanes to one. This caused traffic to back up and block traffic at the next intersection, which ended up causing massive gridlock throughout the city. So in the early 60s, this reporter, he and another reporter, put together a front-page story for Thanksgiving, and they appropriated the police term Black Friday to describe the terrible conditions in the streets. He says, Center City merchants complained loudly to the police commissioner, Albert Brown, about their article that drawing attention to the traffic deferred customers from coming downtown. Now, worried they'd made a mistake in using the term, they went back to the chief inspector to get him to verify it, but he would only say that Black Friday was used to describe the Valentine's Day massacre of mobsters in Chicago. But the following year, the police commissioner put out a press release describing the day as Big Friday. The reporters decided that they weren't going to follow his lead and went back to using Black Friday. And after that, they continued to use it every year, year after year. Eventually, the television crews picked it up. The reporters from the television picked it up. So in reality, Black Friday was started by a traffic cop, guy who directed traffic standing on those wooden platforms before traffic lights existed. It had nothing to do with the actual amount of money that was being made, which is really where it's led to now today. It's all about how much money are the retailers making, and they run into the black, making a profit once Black Friday starts and they start selling things. But no matter what the origin, as Solomon says, it's all chasing the wind. Solomon says, instead, we're supposed to pursue God's law and his wisdom, those things that last forever. One more. We'll be back and see what Jeremiah has to say. We're back. Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. Well, if he was the king of the world, he'd tell us what he'd do. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 6:2, God gives some people wealth, possessions, and honor so that they lack nothing their hearts desired. But God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them, and strangers enjoy them instead. He says this is meaningless, a grievous evil. Well, this past week, and we talked a little bit about this last week, President Obama is fixing our broken immigration system, according to him, as, I guess in his eyes, king of the world. Right, Fred? He's now king of the world?
And now, yeah, this is his way of making, I guess, making sweet love to America.
Right. And he says it's broken, so he's taken executive action to fix the system. And as probably everybody's heard, the different aspects of his thing is to make sure that we secure the border as one of the main points. But his real point in doing all this was to give, and he basically said not amnesty, but to give people the opportunity to succeed in this country that have been here. And I'd have to say, I don't quite agree with him completely.
Well, you know, the thing about this, Doug, is here's the great paradox of it all, and that's a fancy word, but in the name of helping the immigrant, he's actually, what he's done with this single act of ruling by fiat, and creating his own law from the executive branch, which the Constitution clearly forbids, is that he's actually destroying the dreamland of the immigrant. In other words, the reason immigrants used to come to America is because they were escaping nations and countries ruled by tyrants and despots, people that had relatives living in gulags, like in Russia, or, you know, the Jewish people coming from the pales of the former Tsarist Empire of Russia and later in the Soviet Union, or, you know, the...
Italians trying to get away from the mob.
Sicilians escaping the mob, the Poles and the Czechs and all of these people. And when they came to America, there was no welfare. When they came to America, they only came for one reason, and that was a philosophical reason that America represented opportunities guaranteed by the freedoms spelled out in the Constitution. I mean, you know, freedom, you know, it was based on the fact that there were freedoms that they could embrace and find refuge in. This didn't mean their lives here were easy. It didn't mean that they didn't go to sleep hungry at night as they tried to accumulate some kind of foundation, you know, wealth for a foundation, for a lifestyle. All it meant was that if they worked hard enough, they felt that the checks and balances of this country were in place, that they would have a fighting chance to establish a family here. And so inadvertently, in the name of helping the immigrant, he is fundamentally eliminating the foundation of why they would come in the first place. There are dictators everywhere. America's version, in the long run, will not be any better. The only reason it looks halfway decent today is because we have the residue of all of our freedoms and our peace and the infrastructures that have been built in the past. But you take that, those pieces away, you take the checks and balances of our government away, it will not last very long. 100 years from now, going forward, it's going to look completely different, and it will not be the place people wanted to come to.
And I think that's what Solomon is really saying in here. These people will have wealth, possessions, and honor, but they're not going to have the ability to enjoy them, because down the road, like you said, if you just end up with another group of dictators running the country and deciding who gets what and who doesn't.
And so personally, I think, and I'm not just saying this, I think these Republicans that were just elected, and I know that we're, you know, they don't really take their positions until January, but I think they have to fight. I don't think this is about immigration. I think this is about them having to say, we will not be ruled by a rogue executive, chief executive, under any circumstance, in any party.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Brett waiting, and hear what he has to say. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, how are you doing? I've only got a quick question, and I need to preface it with, I'm not discussing whether or not Obama was right or wrong as far as his decision to go with what he did. You know, I'm not saying that what he said or how he's going to do it or anything like that is right or wrong. But my question is, I've been hearing forever, it seems, that people are saying that the man did something that's clearly unconstitutional, he's a rogue president, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, I listened to the Watergate hearings years ago, and I've got the Barbara Jordan speech about what does and does not constitute illegal actions by the president. If the president is clearly unconstitutional right now based on his actions, then why doesn't somebody say, based on this violation of this particular statute, we're going to impeach? That's my question.
Well, I think one of the things that was brought out was the fact that the Constitution does spell out that Congress is the one that puts in place immigration policies.
Okay, well, that's right. And I'm not going to argue that point. My point is that the Constitution has been violated. Everybody says the president has violated that. That is an impeachable action by the president. Right. Why doesn't the GOP-controlled House of Representatives right now, okay, because they've got control right now, even before the new congressman swear, why don't they right now file for put impeachment articles in place? Because everybody's saying the president is in violation of the Constitution. If that's the case, they need to act. If it's not the case, then all this stuff about he's violating the Constitution should stop.
And Fred made the point. I think they're just too afraid to address the issue.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that
they should.
They have to put up or shut up, basically. I agree. I think that
what you're saying is then okay that the president is in violation of the Constitution based on his action, and the House of Representatives, including the Speaker of the House, is too afraid to enforce the Constitution. Therefore, they are in violation of the Constitution. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's their job. They are elected to uphold the Constitution. They swear to do that. And I think when they all start thinking in terms of what's prudent for their political careers, that we're all screwed.
Right.
And it's over.
You mentioned it earlier when we were discussing it, Fred, but Solomon brings it out in Proverbs 18:9. He says, he who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. And that's really what the Republicans are doing. They're in bed with Obama causing this destruction if they're not going to do anything.
Part of the issue, too, is that...
If I can do one more question, I'll get off the line. What particular article, what particular clause in the Constitution prohibits the president to make an executive action? I listened a few minutes ago, and they said that George W. Herbert Walker Bush did a bunch. FDR did a bunch. The presidents seem to do executive actions. And now all of a sudden it's illegal, I guess. I don't know.
No, there's nothing wrong with an executive order. The issue is the specific order that he's doing seems to be at odds with the law, not the Constitution.
That's where the gray area is. If it is, it is. If it's not, it's not.
Right.
Right. Well, the issue is they don't have a strong case against him breaking the law. Essentially, so far what he's done is taking discretion on a law. For instance, the best example I heard was if a cop pulls you over and for speeding but then doesn't give you a ticket, he uses his own discretion, is he breaking the law? Or is he just moving on to something bigger? So there is a law set that he is going kind of against, but he also has the discretion of the executive office. And that's kind of why they kind of have a case, but it's not strong enough, and that's why they won't impeach him. Not yet, not on that.
Okay, that's where it is. Thanks for taking my call, folks. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Brett. So the question is he really breaking the law or not? Well,
it's up to that discretion. It's tough.
It's tough to say, but what he's doing is he's setting a precedence that allows future presidents to do whatever they want, and he's a lot... basically scaring, I think, Congress into not doing anything because they're too afraid to address
it. Well, I would take issue with that. I say that he is breaking the law, that there's already a law in place and that he does not have the power to make law. Only the congressional branch can make laws. And for that reason, for him to assert that he's using a discretion in itself is a lie. He's not using discretion. He's literally making his own law, and I think they need to fight that through. And just like Doug pointed out a second ago, if the Republicans refuse to fight, then they become the brother of one who destroys, and they need to be held accountable for this as well. They were not elected to bury the hatchet. They were elected to challenge this president's agenda. That's why they were elected. If the Republicans do not do that, they're worthless anyway. I know one of the things they're saying, this might hurt our 2016 chances. What I say is, who cares? If you can't do anything today, what good are you in 2016?
Right.
We need another party.
Basically, if you're not going to stand up to the bully, then you're of no help if you let the bully continue to fight.
Yeah, beat up absolutely. On people, it's, right? It's almost like, strategically not good. Well, I don't care about their strategy. I don't care about their careers.
2 years down the road, the bully might beat up on me is what I'm afraid of.
That we would, would to God there'd be some people that would literally, born for a day such as this, would be willing to rise up and push back against the presidency and say, you will not do this in America. Because in 100 years, I'll say it again, this will not look the same. It's going to be a completely different country, and it will be the death of the immigrants' dreamland. There will be nothing special for them to come to, just to have another rogue administration doing whatever they want. And here's another thing I'll tell you. The dangerous thing about this, when people in power abuse their power and the system no longer works, well, that's what gives birth to all kinds of other instabilities,
right,
politically, right?
It flows into the streets instead of being handled within the legislature.
And it flows into other intrigue and coups, because if the only way for you to get power is to gain control of the executive branch and you know everything else is just a joke, well, then what's going to happen? People are going to literally focus all their attention. Right now, it used to be, at least this guy can be, you know, finish his term in 4 to 8 years. But if you're now thinking the executive branch has powers that are beyond what they're supposed to be, once they're in power, they're not going to let it go, because the next person that gets control of the executive branch is going to take his liberties as well, and it's going to become a very ugly thing.
Absolutely. And like Solomon says, when you can't enjoy what you really have developed on your own, it's a meaningless and a grievous evil. And I think that's, like you said, that's where we're headed if things don't change. We'll be right back after these commercial breaks with more of Solomon on Blast, lightening it up a little bit with Can Money Buy You Love? Well, we'll see. We'll be back after these breaks. We're back here on Solomon on Blast. We've had KG waiting over the break, so let's go to the phones. KG, good morning. We want to hear your input.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that impeaching a president is a very, very serious act.
Absolutely.
And it's not made for minor infractions. I believe that he has violated the Constitution, and the Congress has filed lawsuits against what he did. The Supreme Court will rule in Congress's favor and void what the president has done. And you don't have to impeach the man over something like that. That it will be taken care of. We don't have to get all hyper about impeaching. If Congress doesn't impeach, they're guilty of negligence and all that nonsense. Just let it run its course, and the Supreme Court will rule against the president on several items, immigration as well as Obamacare, and this situation is going to take care of itself without shutting down the government. Now, that's another thing. They want the Republicans to shut down the government. They don't have to shut down the government. This situation is being taken care of. Just be patient. We're not going to cure this thing. It didn't come on us overnight. We're not going to cure it overnight, but it is going to be cured. Obama is on his way out, and he has no power. Americans quit believing in him. They don't trust him. They don't trust anything he says. And so just give it some time. It will take care of itself.
Okay, there was a constitutional scholar that spoke this week on I think it was Cavuto, and he was saying that the problem is, according to the Constitution, the first responsibility is impeachment over over the Supreme Court. He's saying it's actually the Supreme Court can just turn this around and say, take care of it yourself. We don't want to deal with it, because that's what the Constitution provides, that they take care of it first between them and the executive branch. They are there to counterweight the executive branch, not the Supreme Court. They would be bowing out of their responsibility. That's the problem.
All right. Then let the Supreme Court say that. Let's not get ahead of the game here. Let the Supreme Court say that, and then we'll take other steps. But let's not be talking about impeaching a black president. What's that? If you think we got problems in Ferguson, think what impeaching a black president would do. That's very serious charges, and we better go the way of the Supreme Court and not impeachment.
Well, we appreciate your input, KG. And everybody has their viewpoint on it, but
I mean, that's not lost on me, and I think that's the brilliance behind the progressives' plan to put a mixed-race president in power. I get that. But sometimes you have to size everything up, and you know, look what happened, Obamacare.
Right.
I mean,
the Everybody said the same
Justice
thing.
Justice Roberts was literally rewrote the legislation for Obamacare, the one that George W. put in place. So
yeah.
I don't have a lot of confidence in the Supreme Court.
No,
right
I
now.
Don't either. So we've got to be open and vocal with regards to where we're going. Now, for this next story, Money Can't Buy Me Love was the Beatles one we were doing. Well, Proverbs says, better to have a little with fear of the Lord than to have great treasure and inner turmoil. In this article, it says, can money buy happiness? Well, scientists are saying that in some respects, maybe it can. It's the age-old question. Over the past few years, new research has given us a deeper understanding of the relationship between what we earn and how we feel. Economists have been scrutinizing it between income and happiness, and psychologists have probed individuals to find out what really makes us tick when it comes to cash. So will that Black Friday purchase really make you any happier? Well, yeah, people with higher incomes are sometimes happier than those who struggle to get by, but there's a little bit more surprising aspect to what their research is showing, and that is it's really not as much what you buy from a material aspect, but it could be the experience that you buy with regards to spending your money. So they're effectively, Fred, they're saying that don't go out and buy material things. Go out and spend your money on something that you can remember, a vacation or something like that. And that is where you really get the happiness side of it.
I think the way I sized it up when we were discussing this earlier was this is basically a car commercial versus a beer commercial. You know, the car, you got to have that beautiful vehicle and that, you know, the experience of having the nicest and shiniest object. And then the beer commercial is, you know, you're sitting on the beach in Hawaii, you know, drinking Dos Equis or something, and you know, and you're having this experience. But I think at the end of the day, it's a wash, Doug. Whether you have another experience or you have the shiny object, I think it's basically the same motive, you know.
Yeah, well, according to this article, they say that the experience tend to meet more of our underlying psychological needs, and supposedly that it doesn't pit you against the Joneses attitude, right? Oh, they've got the new car. I've got to have the newer car. Versus, oh, they went on vacation to someplace, and that's great. I'm glad they were happy. And, you know, I get to go on my vacation someplace. And so the experience part of it can't really be compared equal one to the other.
I think the buyer's remorse beats you up a little bit more on the experience side, though. So what's the question people ask themselves after they partied? And, you know, really, you want to say nice experience, but let's call it what it is. You partied and you had a lot of fun. And they ask themselves this question, what do I have to show for it? So, you know, it sounds good from a certain angle, but there's another angle where people ask themselves this question all the time. Was it worth it? Look it, we've gone here, we've gone there. We, you know, we've eaten spaghetti in Tuscany and whatnot, but we have very little to show for it. So that's the other side. Not all, I should say accumulating things is not all about materialism either. It's sometimes it's about building a life and stabilizing yourself and giving yourself a nice platform to enjoy your life from. So I think this is a little bit, this is leaning a little bit to one side. It must be in the travel section of the
Wall Street Journal.
Yeah,
yeah, maybe. And they even go so far as to say you can get the experiences without even spending the money. And one of the examples that he cites here is that when things become unchanging, then you just kind of get bored with them. So if you keep his comment, if you keep a painting hanging in the same spot on the wall, for example, you'll stop noticing it after a while and you won't appreciate the painting as much. So swap the painting to another room and you'll see it with fresh eyes and appreciate it more. And so again, it's a little bit more of the touchy-feely aspect of it, that purchase will buy you happiness a little bit longer if you can experience it in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, depending on how you approach either side, a great vacation at the right time can make all the difference in the world, you know, bring a release and a refreshing. It's just a matter of not living for those things. I think the bottom line is if you live for stuff or you live for experiences, you're going to be in the long run, a very unhappy person.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other key aspects of their study was, and as Christians, we know this is blatantly obvious, but I guess to them it was kind of a revelation. It says, try giving your money away, giving it away. It says the paradox of money is that although earning more of it tends to enhance our well-being, we actually become happier by giving it away than spending it on ourselves. And we know that it is much, much better to give than to receive.
And that's true on so many different levels.
Right. So that's the question. Will money buy you happiness? Well, it depends on what you're doing with that money and how long will that happiness last. If you're smart, you put it where it lasts forever. We'll come back with our next segment. And the question is, if you can't buy it, can you steal it? Well, according to this article here, Americans steal quite a few things when it comes to Christmas time shopping. It becomes one of the worst times of the year for retailers in terms of losses. Some of the things that Americans are most likely to steal, if you got that clip going, Oscar, run it. Oh, okay. He's got a couple seconds here. Which items do Americans steal most? And the numbers are astounding. It's in the around $1.2 billion, they claim, that gets lost. Go ahead, Oscar. Are we playing?
Yeah. Guess what? The holiday shopping season is quickly approaching. For retailers, that means a boom in customer traffic, but it also means sticky fingers, according to the Global Retail Theft Barometer, released annually by Checkpoint Systems. It's true, Americans steal nearly $16 billion worth of merchandise from retailers every year. That's according to the retailers. Vast majority of shoplifting happens during the holidays. Well, there are a lot of people there. What items are Americans most likely to steal? Let's go with it. Number five, sunglasses. Ever walk into a store and gasp at how expensive designer shades are? That might in part be because how often they are stolen. Number four, that belongs to swimwear. Swimwear is small. These garments can be pocketed easily, and retailers don't use effective security devices to protect them. Third most stolen item in America, fashion accessories and facial creams. The more on-trend, the more likely it is to be stolen, no matter how low the cost. People are cheapskates, aren't they? And the second slot goes to makeup. Part of the reason for the high theft is because the products are easy to pocket. And the most stolen item in America is wine and spirits. Yes, Americans and lots of other people like their booze, especially when they don't have to pay for it.
So Proverbs, Solomon says, people do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his hunger when he's starving, but if he's caught, he must pay sevenfold, though it cost him all the wealth of his house. Now, I wonder if Mr. Obama would agree with that particular piece of scripture when it comes to throwing it out there to deal with the issues at hand. But
I only have one real problem with that. I mean, did you notice in this whole list that overwhelmingly, those products were products that women would steal?
Yeah, I
did notice
that. So
does this mean that women steal more than men?
And
you wouldn't think that.
You wouldn't think that, but I think that really
I think
is,
it might be
that
the
is
truth.
The case. So, all right, just watch out there for the Christmas shopping season. Now, as part of our being thankful, go ahead. Anybody that wants to call in, please give us a call, 750-7456. This is what Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner say they're thankful for this Thanksgiving. If you got that clip ready, Oscar?
You were honored today by People Magazine as well as one of Hollywood's A-list sexy men.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
I thought
indeed.
I was getting a little old for that.
Oh, come on.
No, you know, must be the whole... I have no explanation for that. What can I tell you?
You want a recount? Yeah, I think yours is good. Recount. Holidays are coming up. What are you thankful for, especially when you're here at an event like this?
I'm thankful for, you know, my children and their health. And I'm thankful for my wife, who does great work. And I'm thankful for the many, many blessings that my career has brought me, my work has brought me, you know. Sometimes there's stuff about it that's inconvenient or difficult, but it's important to remember the gifts and, like, getting the chance to do this work.
With the holidays coming up, what are you thankful for?
Certainly, you know, I'm...
That was Ben, now Jennifer.
I'm thankful for access to medical care. I'm thankful that there are books in my home. I'm thankful that my kids are warm enough. The list is endless.
Okay, so Proverbs 28:11, Solomon says, "The rich man is wise in his own eyes, but the poor who has understanding searches him out." And I really started thinking about what they said when they were talking about what they were thankful for. And I think, you know, some of the things they were thankful for were reasonable. Some of them were a little shallow and kind of superficial. But my real question here is, it's not, I don't think it's so much what you're thankful for, but more who you're thankful to for what you have. And they never referenced who they were thankful to.
So now's a good opportunity to take some calls on
what you're thankful for. We've got Danielle waiting. Okay, good morning, Danielle. What are you thankful for?
Good morning. I'm thankful for God first and foremost, because he has blessed my life and he has given me parents that are loving and have stayed faithful in marriage. I'm also very thankful for his sacrifice on the cross. Actually, that's the first thing I should say. And also because I wouldn't be who I am and have anything. And I'm also thankful for the people at the Arizona Center for Judaic Studies, because they have always been really helpful in taking me in and guiding me along the way and through school, and also for people at the Hillel Foundation, because they have made me one of their own. And definitely I'm very, very grateful for my pastors and church leaders, because they have always been there as a reference, and they're accessible. They're not just on a pedestal, and I'm really grateful that they speak into my life and that they are a blessing to me. That's all.
Thanks, Danielle. We appreciate that. So this is really our one greater than Solomon segment this week, is, you know, being able to voice your thanks for what it is that you've got in life that you are thankful for. 1 Thessalonians 5:18, it says, "In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." And I think that's where we're missing, where Jennifer and Ben were missing out. They're still looking at what they're thankful for versus who they're thankful to. We have another caller waiting. Okay, who's next, Oscar? Oh, we don't know. Okay, caller, go ahead.
This is the great unknown. My name is Mark.
Mark, okay.
Mark, I think Daniela just thanked about everybody. I'm trying to think who's left. I ditto what she says in terms of God, who's been such a blessing, and Jesus, who hung on the cross, that I'm just delighted that my sins have been forgiven. But I'm also just personally for my wife, who's put up with me through thick and thin, and certainly for relationships with people. At the end of the day, I believe that life is about relationships, and creating great relationships has been such a blessing. So that's who and what I'm thankful for. And thanks for your show, too. I'm thankful for your show, guys. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mark. We appreciate that. Do we have another caller waiting, Oscar? Not yet? Okay. So the whole concept of Thanksgiving, people pretty much understand that it was back, you know, when the pilgrims first came, and they were thankful for being able to survive the winter and everything. But I think the key part of it is that they didn't forget who it was that they were thankful to, and that was God, versus kind of the approach, the Ben Affleck, the world approach here, of being thankful for things without any reference to, well, who provided those things? Who was the real person in Christ Jesus and God that was providing the things that you're thankful for. I think Ben made the comment that he was thankful for the ability to get into the movie or, you know, the things that he can do. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's his Facebook fans that he's thankful for. It's hard to say. We've got another caller waiting to call. Let us know what they're thankful for. Adam, good morning.
Good morning. Is this the Adventures of Fred and Doug?
It is. Go ahead. What are you thankful for?
Hey, this past year I was on vacation out in Hermosa area, and it's one of the places we stopped. And I was actually there to go to one of my favorite restaurants, Hennessy's, off of 8 Pier Avenue.
Oh, yeah, I know that place. That's a good restaurant.
It's fantastic. What I decided to do was go break some waves, so to speak. And so while being out there, I got caught in a riptide and started getting pulled away further and further away from the shore. And believe it or not, I started to drown. What I mean by that is I was taking on a bunch of water. I was getting knocked around by waves. And before I knew it, I was actually losing consciousness. So I'm out there, and I scream to God for help. And a single wave took me from some 30 yards out all the way to the shore, where I was able to actually get on my hands and knees and crawl out of the water. So I want to thank God for that saving grace there. Just goes to show that you cry out to God, and he was there. He's intimately involved with the details of our life, so to speak.
Absolutely. We appreciate that, Adam. Appreciate
Thanks, guys.
Sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you, Adam.
I'd have to say for me this year, I'd have to thank God for my life because of the motorcycle accident. I still don't know any other way but God's hand that kept me from either ending up with a broken neck, paralyzed, or dead in that motorcycle accident. I ran and walked away from it. So that's, I think for me, that's the biggest thing I'm thankful for is my life itself, just like Adam, really.
Absolutely. You know, Romans 1, when Paul describes the denigration of humanity, he says one of the things that happened is he became unthankful to God.
Mm-hmm.
And so his thoughts became futile and his heart became dark. There's nothing as therapeutic as being thankful.
Right. And we've got a song here that we're going to play out towards the end. And this is from a very young girl, Rima Marvain. We have one more. Oh, we have Lupita. So let's go to Lupita and get her input. Good morning, Lupita.
Good morning. You were given the opportunity to give thanks, and I have to give thanks first and foremost to God. The blood of Jesus that saved me. When I was no people and kept no God, he saved me and he came to my life. Also, I'm very thankful for my husband, a man that he's been stay with me, faithful, through thin and thick, for family and friends, that they are always there supporting me and blessing me. So, you know, I can go through a big things, but the people that God kept placed in my life is like priceless, more than anything. So that's what I'm thankful for.
Thanks. We appreciate that, Lupita.
Opportunity.
And we have another caller, Sandy. Ready?
Good morning.
Good morning. What are you thankful for?
Oh, my goodness. There's a long list. I am thankful for so many things.
Okay, we only got 2.5 minutes, according to Oscar.
You got it. I am thankful for my wonderful husband, who happens to be Doug Martin, for my wonderful children, for my life, for my health. But you know what? I have all of that because of my Lord and my Savior, Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for me. My sins were nailed on that cross. And because of his grace and his mercy, he has just opened up my eyes, my heart, where I can really give thanksgiving. But it's all for his glory and his name. And thanks to our church and the wonderful godly people that I am surrounded by who enrich my life and, if you will, you know, help keep me on track. And that's what I am thankful for.
We appreciate that. We appreciate everything. All the callers. And as we close out, as I always say, until next week, keep thinking wisely, and in addition, keep thanking those, and God especially, that are have blessed you this year. This young lady, Rima Marvain, was 8 years old when she did this song. She grew up without a mother. Her mother actually died when she was about 3 or 4 years old from ovarian cancer. But I think her song says it best. We'll see you next week.